It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Welcome to our new show on KSKA, a really exciting day for us. You'll be hearing from us every week at this time to talk about outdoor topics, information, adventures, whatever it takes to get you outside. And today our topic is ski trail intel. The ski trails around Anchorage, north of Anchorage, south of Anchorage, everything you want to know about them. There are really the topic of skiers all the time. You know, that I sometimes laugh at myself as I'm out skiing and run into a friend and you talk about the snow. Well, you know, and the trail, and that's sort of what it's all about. And so that's what we're going to get into today. We're going to talk about the new trail up in the Hatcher Pass area, the new trail down in Girdwood, the trails in Anchorage, grooming, how our trails compare with other places, and questions you have. I've got the experts here in the studio. Diane Moxness is with me. She's the executive director of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. I know you're back there behind that microphone somewhere, Diane.
Hey, Charles.
Thanks for being with us. And Adam Verrier, who is a super skier, saw him skiing in the Sven race on Sunday. He said he was injured and was going to go slow, and then he finished fifth, like half an hour ahead of me. Thanks for being with us, Adam.
Thank you. Yeah, that race surprised me in a good way.
Oh, great, great. Well, and Adam, you went to the Olympics in 1994. You were ill and didn't get to race, which I imagine has got to be one of the more frustrating experiences of your life. And spent a lot of time, maybe 10 years, as basically a full-time ski racer, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that week was kind of an emotional week because it was the goal that I had for a long time to ski in the Olympics and then to be on the team, but to not get to race because I caught a cold and just wasn't as fast as the other guys was very frustrating.
Yeah, I imagine. So you've raced in Europe and you've raced obviously all over the United States and in the Olympics at Lillehammer. How do our trails in Anchorage compare to ski trails in other communities and other places around the world?
I think that our ski trails here within the city at our dedicated ski areas such as Hillside and Kincaid and even Bartlett and the other, there's several others, the University and APU and Russian Jack, they compare very similarly to the racing trails that you see in Europe. And the majority of ski trails in Scandinavia and in Central Europe in the Alps are not racing trails but touring trails, and they tend to be more gradual, and the loops tend to be much longer. Our trails at Kincaid, for example, are what they would consider racing trails in Europe and Scandinavia.
And in terms of the steepness and the length, basically?
Yeah, that's right. So in a typical town in Norway, medium-sized small city or large town, you'd have a set of racing trails that might be 10 or 15 kilometers in length, but then you would have a system of touring trails that might be 1,500 or 2,000 kilometers of trails that go out through the mountains. And those trails they quite often follow logging roads and private roads that are there during the summer that people are driving on. And then during the winter when the snow comes, those trails get turned into ski trails. And they're groomed regularly daily or every few days with heavy equipment and there's a real skiing culture, and a lot of people are getting out skiing on those trails. But the typical person who goes out skiing in Scandinavia would go on those touring trails, and the racers would train on the racing trails. But most people would prefer to be on the touring trails because they just go out into the countryside.
Just keep going. Yeah, interesting. That's a little bit maybe like our multi-purpose or bike trails that we have around town.
Yeah, somewhat similar in that way. And I think that whenever I drive through a place like Eureka or the upper Susitna Valley in the Talkeeton area, if those areas were Norway, they would most likely have enormous trail systems, and we do have big trail systems in both of those areas, and they're multi-use trail systems, but generally used by snow machines and dog mushers, I'd say, more than skiers in those areas. But I think the difference is that it's not legal, for example, in Scandinavia to drive a snow machine on those trails, and they have different land laws. They have a law called Allmänns Rätt, which says that nobody can keep you off of private property. You can ski or walk across private property, and so fundamentally different laws.
Different way of looking at things. Diane Moxness, you are the executive director of this organization. We were just talking about how large the Ski Association of Anchorage is. And how many skiers do you think there are in Anchorage, cross-country skiers?
We guesstimate about 20,000, 25,000. We've heard 40,000 number knocked around, but it depends on do you have a pair of skis.
How do you define
a skier? Or do you ski every day or do you ski once a year? But we kind of use 20,000.
And how many people are actually members and contribute?
We have 2,500 memberships. If you count all of the family members, people that ski in a family, we have about 5,000 members that support our organization at various levels.
So, and the way we do it here in Anchorage is people contribute voluntarily. They buy their trail pin or they give money to your organization, and you take that money and you go out and groom the ski trails. So there's no government money involved in this.
No, we have a contract to groom the trails out in Eagle River. The Eagle River Parks and Rec, Eagle River area has their own Parks and Rec department, and they have a park maintenance levy on their property tax. And so we have a contract with Eagle River Parks and Rec to groom the trails out at Beach Lake and Mirror Lake and Eagle River High School around there. So we actually get paid to groom those trails. The other trails we use donations and money that we raise on our events to groom those. We also have a contract with the school system to put on the high school races, and the community gets to benefit from the grooming that happens for the high school and middle school students.
So how much money are you spending on grooming? How many people are out there working on your grooming?
We spend anywhere a little over $500,000 every year on our operations department, which includes grooming and the trail maintenance in the summer, repairing trails, building new trails, repairing equipment. Mm-hmm. So between $500,000 and $600,000 a year.
That's a pretty big operation.
It's a big number. Yeah, it's a big number to cover.
And that's all happening in the wintertime primarily?
We have four people that work year-round. In our operations department, director of operations, we have a maintenance person that works year-round, and then two groomers in the winter also do equipment maintenance and then trail work. We do a tremendous amount of trail work in the summer, repairing trails. But we have over $1 million worth of equipment that we break in the winter and we fix in the summer. Hmm. Well, we have to fix it during the winter also, but we spend a lot of time doing maintenance on equipment.
Is this a typical way that a community handles ski trails? It seems like to do everything on the honor system must be kind of unusual, but maybe not.
I think most communities, you're expected to pay a trail pass to use the trails just like you would a downhill or alpine area.
So in other words, you go and you have to have some kind of ticket to ski.
Mm-hmm. Some of it is more or less on the honor system of, kiosk at the trailhead.
Like maybe we do at our state parks trails where you have to put money in an Iron Ranger.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I'm sure there are other communities where there are trails that you can, public use trails that have no fee associated with them. A lot of the communities that groom, though, are paid by the city or the municipality or the state to groom the trails.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, our topic today on Outdoor Explorer is ski trails, and Diane Moxness is with me, and Adam Verrier here in the studio, and we'd like to hear your questions, any questions about ski trails, about grooming, comments, complaints, disagreements, compliments, all welcome. We're in Anchorage at 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And you can get on the air with us in writing by going to our Facebook page. Just go to Outdoor Explorer on Facebook, or outdoorexplorer.org is our website, and it's pretty cool. I really recommend you check it out because there's a lot of links there. There's the opportunity to comment at the bottom of the page, tons of photos, video. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we're putting a lot of work into this Outdoor Explorer webpage in hopes that we can kind of create a something of an outdoor community here through the radio show, and maybe you will be inspired to say, "Wow, I'd like to hear a show on this topic," or look at one of the topics we already have planned and suggest questions or suggest guests you might want to hear. Tons of resources there about skiing, but then there are also resources about some of our upcoming shows. We're going to be doing this every week, Thursday at 2:00. And repeating at 7:00. And we hope folks will get involved and also friend us on Facebook. There's a lot of posts that are already getting started and people commenting about our topic, which is just exactly what I was hoping was going to be happening. I'd like to invite another guest onto the air now. There's a new ski trail down in Girdwood that is just opened up this year, and it's a pretty extraordinary trail, just in terms of how fun it is to ski. I got the opportunity to go down there and do it, even though the conditions the day I skied it was raining. I still had a great time and did it twice. And one of the masterminds of that project is in the studio with me, Brian Burnett, who is also the mountain manager at Alyeska Resort, but he's involved in the Nordic Ski Club down in Girdwood. Thanks for being with us, Brian.
Hi, Charles. Great to be here.
Yeah. So how did this come about? That you're obviously a much smaller organization than the Anchorage Ski Club. How did you pull off building this 5K trail?
A couple of us got together and decided that it would be a great idea to take some seed money that came from Heritage Land Bank from some earlier projects down in Girdwood. And there was some money set aside to study the feasibility of a Nordic trail system in the Girdwood Valley. We were able to turn that seed money into a feasibility study that the Boutte Company did for us. And we got Jim Galanis out in the field, and he laid out a trail loosely following some of the original Girdwood Nordic Trail and from the 1969 Junior Nationals. And we started raising money, applying for grants, getting donations from the community, from Anchorage, and statewide.
And how much did it cost to do this whole project?
The trail, when we first started out, was going to be a summer and about $300,000. And 3 years later, we've put about $800,000 into that trail and now have 5 kilometers of pretty spectacular skiing.
Yeah, well, that is an amazing amount of money. But it's basically for heavy equipment and that kind of thing?
Correct. We needed to get a trail established kind of up valley, if you will. The original multi-use trails around the valley tend to follow in the meadows in the lower-lying areas. We needed to get up valley, which meant moving up into the forest. We had to open up the forest canopy. And we, of course, are building a significant piece of recreational infrastructure in a rainforest.
Right. Big trees, a lot of bumps in the road and that kind of thing. Now, for people who want to ski it, if you've been to ski the Nordic trails in Girdwood, when you go out the Glacier Highway, you come to the resort, you turn left as if you're going to the hotel, and then you can park at that Stumpy Faulkner parking lot, and that gets you into the Moose Meadow, which is flat, which is about a 5K loop. Roughly, or
correct. Yeah. If you go ski through Moose Meadows and link up to the new Nordic Loop, you get a great 10K loop out mm-hmm. of the out of your day.
And if you want to go straight to the new, more challenging Nordic Loop, because the Moose Meadow is pretty flat.
Very flat.
Yeah. If you want to just go ski the new loop, then you'd go basically to the end of that Arlberg Road and what park there at the resort, basically.
Or? Most days there is some parking available mm-hmm. in the lots
right.
adjacent the hotel.
And there's also an access at that church, which is at the back of the parking lot across
correct,
the hotel.
Correct. Yeah. That's probably the best place to park.
Mm-hmm. So this trail is definitely not a beginner's trail. I was impressed at how challenging it was, and I saw some beginners who got to the end of the trail and said, "We made it! We survived!" So you've got a beginner trail in the Moose Meadow, and then you've got, was this intended to be kind of more of an advanced, exciting trail for better skiers?
Absolutely. Anybody that knows Jim Galanis well knows that he has a bit of a sadistic streak in him. The trail has some spectacular gradual climbs, some thrilling downhills. Jim envisioned the trail as something that we will be able to host national and maybe even international competition on that trail in some form.
And I was surprised in looking at the map, which we have on our website at outdoorexplorer.org, is that it leads almost all the way back to what would be the Winter Creek Trail, right, or back to the creek. It's not that far, not much farther, but you just ski up the loop and come back. You don't really see the existing Forest Service trail.
Actually, you see the Nordic Trail from the Winter Creek Trail in a couple of spots where the trail is only separated by about 50 feet. We had to squeeze the trail in between the CPG Cat Road and the Winter Creek Hiking Trail.
The Cat Road that takes skiers up the mountain.
Exactly, yeah. Up valley, correct.
Uh-huh. I want to just ask Adam if you've had a chance to ski this new trail and what you thought of it when you got out on it.
Yeah, we loved it. I'm a volunteer assistant coach with UAA. And when we didn't have very good snow in Anchorage, we were going out there a lot for training. And the reaction of the skiers that we had on the team, many of whom have skied all over the world in a lot of really great ski areas, everybody loved the trail. And so we were doing a lot of our workouts out there. Even when the snow got better in Anchorage, we were when we had an important hard workout to do, we were going to Girdwood to do it. So not only did they have better early season coverage, but we think that the layout of that trail is perfect for training. I personally would love to see the NCAA National Championships held on that trail. I think it'd be fantastic.
Because of the steepness and the long uphill?
Yeah, it fits the profile of an international racing trail. And I don't have the specifics on mm-hmm. What that profile is, but just skiing it and having skied a lot of racing trails that World Cups are held on and those sort of things, this trail is of that variety, and it's also really beautiful.
Oh, it is. I love that, all the big trees along it. Brian?
One of the things that we do envision with that Nordic Trail is an NCAA championship out there where the teams would be staying, let's say, at the Hotel Eliuska. Your Nordic team would go a couple hundred meters out of the hotel to be on the Nordic race trail. The Alpine team would just step out the hotel door, jump on the tram, and be at the start for the Alpine events. It would be be an awesome competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we had a listener who got on board with our Facebook and with our commenting, and it's a pretty lengthy comment. So I'm just going to call for listeners to take a look at outdoorexplorer.org and scroll down and look at the entire comment. But essentially, he's bringing up the point that competitive Nordic skiers are a tiny minority of the population. Competitive skiers want these really wide trails. And that is environmentally insensitive in an area where there's a lot of users, there's wildlife, and he makes a criticism of the new Girdwood Trail. It says, it seems like it's a road through the forest, and why doesn't it follow the existing meadows more? Why is it so intrusive? So I want to talk to you, Brian, and then we'll talk about sort of Anchorage trails a little bit too. Is the old-fashioned trails you might think of, like the Lake Loop at Kincaid, it's very narrow and the trees are next to you, and these new trails are really, really wide. Environmental concerns or feedback, or how did you address those sensitivities?
We wanted a trail, first of all, that we could also use on a year-round basis, which means that we needed to find ground that did drain, so we did have to move up valley for that. We needed to open the trail up more, not only for construction, but also for mechanized maintenance as we move along in the long run. We do need to maintain these trails to very high standards during the off season, so they work well in the wintertime. We received criticism for creating a road through the forest. And right now, it quite honestly does look like a road. The forest over the next few years is going to come back in and do some landscaping of its own. And we have actually some grant money specifically dedicated to improving the forest characteristics around the trail.
Mm-hmm. How do you do when you're doing the design? What are the factors you have to take into account? You obviously want a nice finished trail, but you've also got a lot of other factors in consideration. And how does that balancing, or how does that take place?
It's mostly how do you groom the trails effectively in the wintertime? To get a full-size snow cat around, you need certain turn radiuses for the cat to operate. You need a certain width for the snow cat to operate.
Okay. Well, this is a topic that I want to come back to again later in the show, because it is it's a hot one. It's this sense of balancing different users and different desires and the sense out there that skiers are the, sort of the pushy ones. We think all the trails are for us. But for you, for your community, I mean, I do also want to stick a little bit with the positive. It must be a really exciting thing to have this new facility down there. And how are people reacting to it in general?
We've had a very positive outpouring from the community. Mm-hmm. We've copied the Nordic Ski Club of Anchorage model, and we're selling trail pins, and we've sold 700 trail pins in Girdwood, you know, and so that means
that,
that
be
community.
A significant proportion of your whole population.
Yeah,
down
exactly.
There.
You know, the community stepped up well. There was certainly criticism early on about us deciding not to allow dogs or walkers on it, but we have enough multi-use trails around the valley that, that there's room for everybody to recreate out there.
All right. Well, thanks, Brian Burnett, Girdwood Ski Club and Alyeska Resort. We've got a couple of calls that I want to get to before we take a break. So let's go to Richard from Anchorage. Richard?
Hello. I had a question about the on the trails in Anchorage this last week, and I was skiing on the Tour of Anchorage Trail, and it's groomed for skating and for classic, and it has a single classic track on the right-hand side. So as I'm approaching somebody and somebody's or two people are approaching, who has right of way and does it change on the hills?
Mm, that's one of our two-way trails. Who wants to take that one? Adam, go ahead.
I think that in general, there's the one main rule that I would say to start with is the skier that's more proficient, in my opinion, should be the one getting out of the way of the skier who's less comfortable and less proficient. And sometimes it's pretty obvious when you're approaching somebody either from behind or from the front that, you know, this person is struggling just to stay in the tracks. I'm going to go around and let them have it. But in general, I depending a little bit on the situation, but if it's relatively easy, if you're going downhill, letting the uphill skier ski in the track, if you're going, if you're meeting each other, is a polite thing to do for the uphill skier. On the other hand, if you've got a difficult downhill and somebody's screaming down the hill, half out of control, letting them have the right of way is a good way to go. So I don't think there's a real hard and fast rule. When I'm skiing, if I see somebody coming toward me on a tour like on a trail like the Tour of Anchorage Trail, if it's easy for me to get out, I try to get out of the track early so that they don't feel pressure to do so, and it's easy enough to go around.
Yeah, I think it's just that there's a certain politeness there, and sometimes you'll see strong skiers who maybe have an attitude. You know, they think they own the world, and that bugs me when I see them sort of wanting to bash through the beginners. But I agree with Adam. You know, just be nice.
And I'd say one more thing, that if you're a beginner skier, not as proficient, and you're skiing in the tracks, and you have maybe more experienced skiers coming up behind you or good skiers coming up behind you, I'd recommend that you just let them go around. The good skiers can negotiate their way around the less proficient skiers very easily. And so when I'm coming up behind a skier who's not as good, I'm usually trying to get out and go around so that they don't feel pressure to get out of the tracks.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, thanks, Richard. We're going to go now to Stu, who is calling from Muldoon to talk about the Bartlett Trail system. Stu?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and I think this is probably going to be a wonderful show, especially as you continue with other topics, but I just wanted to draw attention. The Bartlett Trail system has some big issues coming up with the Bartlett Turf project. They're planning to put in a full-size turf soccer field, and as well as a full-size baseball field, as well as a softball field, which will all be fenced off in three different units in what is now the large open start zone and a large technique ring for that skiers use and the cross-country runners use. And I hope everybody is getting aware of about what's about to happen, because the Northeast Community Council, which I am a member, has advocated a request to move the fence north to facilitate these projects so that all user groups can get it to work. But we got to get some okays with the folks on J-Bear to do that. But anyhow, I just want to draw attention to that and see if the Norwich Ski Club folks are aware of that. Because the Bartlett 5K is probably one of the best 5Ks around.
Diane Moxness, go ahead. She's the executive director of the ski club.
Yeah, we're well aware of the turf projects that are on the planning board for that. We've got a couple of volunteers that have been sitting in on the meetings, and our race officials have been weighing in on the design that's on the board now and what the running and the skiing community need as start-finish areas and that, where they have planned the stadiums and fencing needs that, you know, we need to get in there to groom for start areas, and they, you know, the issue of having heavy equipment on turf fields It just not to displace one sport for another. The Bartlett area ski area is the only trail system that's all on school district, or majority of it's on school district property, and so it's a area that the school district can use without paying a fee. And we have host middle school races and high school races out there, and oftentimes it's some of the best snow in town. It doesn't have the wet wind from the inlet. It doesn't get the Chinooks and the wind on the hillside. And a lot of times when the skiing just isn't any good anywhere else in town, Bartlett is this little cold pocket of fantastic skiing that is a little hidden jewel that it's a wonderful trail system, 5K, that's just beautifully designed by Bill Spencer about maybe 5-6 years ago. So.
Oh, is that right? It's that recent.
Yeah.
Hey, we're talking about ski trails on Outdoor Explorer, and my guests in the studio are Diane Moxness from the North Ski Association of Anchorage and Adam Verrier, a former Olympian. We're going to be doing some other business for a few minutes, but we're going to be back with your calls. I'll be giving out those phone numbers shortly. Now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. Dr. Seuss is the theme at this week's Westchester Lagoon Family Skate on Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. in Anchorage. Burn barrels are available to warm up, and over 1 mile of groomed skating trails. That's amazing. For more information on the weekly family skate sessions, go to muni.org. The Kinnick Canoers and Kayakers will hold their monthly meeting at the Lusac Library in Anchorage on Tuesday, February 26th at 7 p.m. Learn more about efforts to establish a 125-mile Kachemak Bay water trail and see photos from a recent pack rafting adventure of Alatna River in the Brooks Range. For more information on that, go to kck.org. The second annual Big Fat Bike Festival will take place in Home Run February 28th to March 1st. Activities include beach rides, trail rides, obstacle courses, and demos. To register and see the full calendar of events, go to homercyclingclub.com. And you can find links to all those activities and more at outdoorexplorer.org. We'll keep that updated every week, so it'll be there whether we're on the air or not. Finally, the biggie, Anchorage for Rendezvous 2013, starts tomorrow, the February 22nd, and continues through March 3rd. And on the phone with us right now to give us some of the highlights, we have for Rondi Chair John McCleary. John, thanks for being with us.
No, thank you for the invitation.
So I understand you're actually doing some Fur Rondi work right now with the foot race.
That's correct. I've been a past director of the Frostbite Foot Race, and I'm helping out the new team that's going to be managing the event, and we'll be down there doing the costume judging for Rendezvous, and yeah, we've got our sleeves rolled up and digging right in. Tonight is the bib pickup and late registration for the Frostbite Foot Race at the Glacier Brew House starting at 3:30. So it's still time to sign up for Frostbite.
All right, and tell me about the Frostbite Foot Race. What does it entail exactly?
Oh my gosh!
You don't have to get frostbit, right?
No. And you don't have to run barefooted. It's actually three events: a fun 2.5K, a more of the normal race 5K around basically the parade route, and then we have a costume run, which people can be judged for costumes in four different categories, and if they're lucky enough, they can receive cash prizes and awards for the costumes, anywhere from singles to couples, to families, and or businesses. And one of the really, really great things that's going to be happening is that Healthy Futures is going to sponsor the first 150 children that are under 14. So that means they can run for free as part of the focus of Healthy Futures. So
that's great. So the late registration is going on in like half an hour down at the Glacier Brew House. And when does the race actually start?
The start of the race is on Saturday. We'll be open for registration, late registration, at 7 o'clock, and the race time is at 9:30 underneath the Performing Arts Center Skybridge, and it's a one-hour event. And then after that, we enjoy the Glacier Brew House and the awards and the warmth of the Glacier Brew House, I should say.
All right. And fireworks tomorrow night, Friday night?
Tomorrow night. It's Saturday night. Right after the Big Sky event, we've got the snowboarder event that's going to be happening there on the side slope of Kiana Park. But the fireworks is going to be starting right around that 6:30 time mark downtown.
And what do you think is the best spot to watch the fireworks?
Well, if you have a warm room in a hotel, that's a very nice spot. But they're from
the 20th floor of the Marriott or something like that, huh?
There you go. They're on the Carnival side is just a beautiful location. I know that many people will go over onto the Government Hill side and go to the Old Hermits Park at the very end, very west end of Government Hill, and watch the fireworks from the opposite side of downtown.
And they're actually going up from the waterfront area, essentially?
That's correct. They're from at the small boat harbor.
Okay. And what are some other highlights for Rondi that are coming up this weekend?
Oh, my gosh. We've got the dogs running on 4th Avenue, the World Championship Sled Dog Races that start tomorrow at noon. We've got the Jim Beam Jam. We've got the Snows, which will be held at the Egan. That is an adult-only party at 8:30. But we also have the snow sculptures that are right now. The carvers are down there busily carving away, with judging happening on Sunday morning. Where do we start? I mean, we've got the carnival, we've got the fur auction, and then we've got coming up the following weekend. Oh, we also have Rondi on Ice there at UAA, which is put on by the Anchorage Figure Skating Club as an showcasing our youth in ice skating.
It's great to see Rondi sort of come back and full of energy, and there's a tremendous amount of stuff to do. And listeners who want to learn more can go to the For Rondi website, and we'll also have links from our website at outdoorexplorer.org.
Right, and our site is www.forrondi.net, and that does. And our registrations are still open for the Yukagossin, which is our snowball battle. We've got the curling club doing the fur spiel this weekend, starting Friday at 6 o'clock. It's a great time to have a party to send off winter into the closet.
All right. Well, thanks very much, John McCleary, chairman of For Rondi. Thanks for your service as chair, and thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, and Rondi on.
All right. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're going to be talking more about ski trails, and I'll be giving out the phone numbers for you to get on the air with my guests in just a moment when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. If you're listening in the evening, it's a recorded rebroadcast, and we will not be taking phone calls. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs at outdoorexplorer.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. It's our new show. We're going to be on the air every Thursday at this time, 2 to 3 o'clock, and repeating at 7, to talk about the outdoors, the things you can do around Anchorage, adventures, information, and hopefully advice for the beginner and for the advanced outdoor practitioner. Our topic today is ski trails. We're going to listen here in a little while about a new ski trail up in the valley near Hatcher Pass. And in the studio with me, I've got a couple of real experts, Diane Moxness, who is the executive director of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, and Adam Verrier, a former Olympian and expert skier who has skied all over the world. And we'd like to hear from you as well. In Anchorage, the phone number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And if you give us a message on Facebook, I will use those messages on the air. Just go to Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and post your message, or on our website at outdoorexplorer.org, which is also where you'll find all the links and resources for the show. Diane, I wanted to talk about this topic that we started to broach a little bit before the break, about the balance of different types of users. There's obviously a lot of trail users in Anchorage, but even within the skiing community, there are different types of users. Some want narrow trails and want to ski classic only. Others are, you know, elite racers, and most of us are sort of in between. We have lots of things we want to do. How does the Ski Association attempt to balance these different interests and sort of meet the needs of everyone?
Well, it's a tough job, and we try to serve all of the skiing community's needs. And so there's a really wide variety of trails. Like you said, there's some narrow trails, the Lake Loop, the Horseshoe Loop in Kincaid, as well as the Richter and Ridge trails up on the hillside, which are narrow, classic only. They're set usually with one or two sets of classic tracks. And they are our least used trails within the trail system. And when we do surveys, we find that we have about 10% of our members only classic ski, and we have about 10% of our members that only skate ski, and everybody else does both. And so sometimes it's just, you know, what kind of snow is out there, and what do people feel like doing? Most people skate ski now, even though they will have both sets of skis. In fact, some people, probably like Adam, has more than two sets of skis. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, most people view themselves as recreational skiers, even though they might, say, once a year do the Tour of Anchorage, which is coming up next weekend. Mm-hmm. They don't view themselves as competitive skiers. They may ski, but most of the time people ski for recreational. They like to be outside. They like to be recreating with their friends. And so, you know, we try to accommodate, one, the just sheer numbers of people on a trail. That if you have very narrow trails and you have a lot of people on them, it gets to be dangerous and not an enjoyable experience. So almost, if we can, we set a set of tracks for classic skiers on the side of every trail that we groom.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brian Burnett in the last half hour was talking about concerns people had about the new trail in Girdwood being too wide and sort of intrusive and not sort of natural enough. And at Kincaid, we've had a lot of changes with widening of trails. The biathlon range moved, and there were some trees cut down there. What is the response that you've received on that, and is there a balancing to be made there?
Well, there's always people have differing views of what a park should look like. Some people view any kind of trail within a park as you cut down a tree, and that's intrusive. Other people view trails as a way to get into a park and enjoy it. And like I said, a lot of the trail's size dictates on the sheer number of people that use the trails themselves. And also that almost every single trail that's been built within Kincaid especially has been in response to a national event coming up. And the Sisson Trail was built because we had a national world Masters, I think, coming up, and we needed more flat trails for master skiers. And so that's how the Sisson Trail system was developed, why the Sisson Trail was developed. Now it's a fabulous recreational use. The same with the Lake Loops were originally put in to support high school ski racing, and now it's strictly recreational. I don't think we do any races on it at all. So a lot of times it's the competitive side of the sport that drives the trail making, and yet it's a benefit for most of us that don't view ourselves as competitive skiers that get out there just for recreation.
All right. Well, let's go to a call. Andrew is calling from Anchorage. Andrew, what's your question?
So my first question was, I noticed on the NSAA website that they're asking the legislature for just shy of $1 million in funding. And so I guess my first question was why should, other people's tax money be spent to subsidize their fun? My second question has to do with, you know, when their membership represents less than 1% of the population of Anchorage, about how it is it's appropriate there are so many trails that are ski only.
Okay. Well, let's have both of our guests come in on that one. But Diana, imagine you have some talking points about why skiing is beneficial.
Well, the trails are year-round trails are used by the public. It's the trails are not strictly for Nordic Ski Association members. They're open to the public. It's not dissimilar to public radio or public television that a small portion of the public funds it and the population gets to enjoy it. So it's a sport that's heavily heavily, a lot of people participate in the sport, and the people that are members that pay for the grooming and the year-round maintenance of the soft surface trails within town, it's a fairly small percentage of those people, but the majority of the people in the Anchorage enjoy it. And when population of Anchorage is asked, you know, what do you enjoy about living in Anchorage, and trails are way up there at the top. That's why people enjoy. They ski on them in the winter. That we support a lot of multi-use trails at biking, walking, running, and in the summertime, hiking, bird watching, biking. You know, it's a year round. Those trails get used mm-hmm. year round.
Adam, do you want to kick in on that? I'm sorry?
Why should those funds not go to some other organization, like one that's oriented toward biking or dog walking?
Well, I suppose they're able to go down and ask for money from the legislature too, eh?
Yeah, I think the question is similar maybe to, why should we build softball fields, or why should, if I don't play on a softball team, I think it's an amenity that's used by the community. And I think that it's, just as we build softball fields, we build other recreational facilities, tennis courts. I drive by, I haven't played tennis in years, but I drive by the park strip, and those tennis courts in the evenings are usually used. And I think it's a good amenity to have, and I think it's the same with ski trails.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. We're going to move on now to another guest who is joining us from the Matsu Ski Club. Ed Strabel is on the line, and the Matsu organization has just built a new trail near Hatcher Pass that is a I haven't been on it yet, but I've heard some really good things about it. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
So tell us about the new trail. It's the Government Peak Trail, right? And how long is it?
On the south side of Government Peak, and it's a long, long time coming. Actually started in 1986 when a guy with a skier from DNR was doing the Hatcher Pass Management Plan, contacted me and some other people in the Matsu Burroughs Trails Committee and said, hey, you ought to check out this area for cross-country ski trails. And we did, and found that it's just an unbelievable area for cross-country skiing. It's out of the wind pattern, gets and holds snow. When it's super cold on out, there's usually an inversion, so it's relatively warm up there. In fact, when U.S. Nationals were held in Anchorage and they had to cancel several races and postpone others, it was 17 degrees above zero at 1,200 feet up here. And we finally got through a lot of hard work by people at the Matsu Borough, and a lot of volunteers got about a little bit under 7 kilometers of ski trail in the trail proper, but the system actually is just under 10 kilometers if you were to ski it.
So this was just constructed and basically finished for this winter?
Yep, finished up late this fall.
And so now you've kind of got a system where early in the season you can ski up in the Independence Mine area, and then you can sort of move your way down as the snow comes down, right?
Yeah, correct. Our ski club goes ahead and grooms Independence Mine, usually starting somewhere around the 15th of October. It was about 15th of November this year because of the late snow. Then we move down and start doing Archangel Road, which is much more gradual, conducive to walkers, skiers, ski jurors, and dog walkers. And then finally, when we get the snow down here, we start grooming the Government Peak Trails, and we pull our equipment out of Independence Mine, but we continue to do Archangel Road to meet the needs. Your discussion earlier about other user groups, primarily for ski jurors and walkers, although we do have one loop, the Pioneer Loop, that is dog-friendly and walker-friendly.
Okay. And how did you bring this about? Was it a lot of volunteer work? Were you able to raise some money from in the government, or where did it come from?
Well, the big chunk of money came from Ted Stevens and Don Young. They got a $6 million appropriation from the Department of Transportation for transportation infrastructure. And a large part of that actually went into the environmental impact statement, which was required prior to them basically disturbing any ground. And in fact, I think over half of it went for the EIS, but
wow.
Finally got it.
Did your project actually cost $6 million? That seems like a tremendous amount of money.
It is a tremendous amount of money. And only a small portion went for the trails. We had a tremendous amount of volunteers that dropped trees and actually cleared the trails so that we could go ahead and do it. In fact, we've got the competitive loops that we haven't even touched, but all the trees that were necessary to be moved have been moved off those trails, but we just need the money to go ahead and do the cat and excavator work and put in a few culverts there. But most of the money actually went for the access road and parking area, which is just a little bit under a mile long.
I see. And this was all part of a dream that there was going to be a major alpine ski area there, which I remember people talking about.
What they were envisioning, at least as far as transportation was concerned, was people could go ahead and come from various spots of the valley to this location and then take mass transit or the mascot bus on up to the downhill area if they were downhill skiers, or if they were Nordic skiers, they could take a mascot bus from various spots in the valley on up to this new Nordic center. In fact, that's what's happening this year. Mascot, the Matsu Valley bus service, runs several times a day from different locations in Palmer and Wasilla on up to the trailhead.
All right. So, Ed, just to orient people how to get there, I did put a link to your website on our website at outdoorexplorer.org. But how do you get to the trails? How do you find them?
I know that primarily this is Anchorage population, and a lot of folks from Anchorage have been on up here. You'd come on out on the Glen Highway, get off on Trunk Road, take Trunk Road to where it intersects with Palmer Fishhook, make a left, and you go just past the intersection with Wasilla Fishhook, or if you'd be coming from the valley and Wasilla area, you'd come Wasilla Fishhook, and go just beyond that intersection to Edgerton Park Road, just before you go up in through the canyon or across the Little Sioux. You actually do cross the Little Sioux and go approximately 1 mile to the access road going up to the trailhead.
Okay, and it's there's signs along the way, I suppose?
There is the construction company that they've had to put a bunch of signs on up, but it's the Hatcher Pass access road is what they're calling it. It is going to be renamed here once the ground thaws and they can put up a new sign. I think it's a Mountain Park Road or something like that.
Okay. So let me turn to Adam Verrier. Adam, have you had the opportunity to ski the new trail out there?
No, I haven't, but I know people who have.
Uh-huh.
I know the year before, not this past fall, but the fall before, UAA went up there to have the ski team went up there to have a training camp,
uh-huh.
and they came back raving about it. They said it was fantastic skiing. One of the kids on the team, I think, even made a video about it, and they were saying it was really great. So I know they were really disappointed this past fall when they didn't have enough snow to go up there, and the team went somewhere else instead. But I know that everybody that had been there the year before on the team uh-huh. was really disappointed in that.
What's the style of the trail, Ed? Would you say for beginners, for intermediate, for advanced?
The trails are pretty much designed for beginner to intermediate. In fact, the trail that Adam's talking about, actually that's the trail that's on my property, and most of that trail has been abandoned, but except for the trail on my property, and the one portion is now two-way traffic. We got the contractor to make it a little bit wider. That's the most technical portion of the trail, and it includes about a 200-foot vertical climb from my property on up to intersect with the trail, and we groom from my property. But my trails are quite a bit narrower. They're just wide enough for a skate and classic lane, but then the six-and-a-fraction-kilometer loops that we have on out there are designed for beginner to intermediate, and they're, in most cases, about 16 to 22 feet wide, and of course we have a classic track set on the right side, or we've got a few two-way sections that are a little bit wider, and again, classic tracks and skate lane in the middle.
All right, and it must be great for your community members out there and for your high school skiers to have a first-class trail right in the valley.
Oh, they're loving it.
Yeah. All right, Ed Strabel, thanks a lot for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. It's Outdoor Explorer. We've got about 10 minutes left to talk about ski trails. And if you want to get on the air, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. On Facebook, Outdoor Explorer. And tons of information at outdoorexplorer.org as well. Adam Verrier, you're a competitive skier, and I heard something interesting from a competitive skier that surprised me, which was that you guys kind of prefer the hilly trails because you get a chance to rest on the way down, where the rest of us might like kind of a flat trail and consider that easier. You might actually consider a hilly trail easier than for the long flat one. True?
Well, in a race, for sure. On flat trails, you just never get any rest. And so whether it's fairly flat or fairly steep, there's only so hard you can go, so high you can get your heart rate. And so if you never have any rest, it's pretty hard. If you go up steep hills, there's only so hard you can go uphill. It's nice to get a rest on the way down. Mm-hmm. But for training, just for going skiing, I personally prefer hillier trails just because I think it provides more variety. It's maybe akin to being on a trail that has different views. It just makes it more interesting if you're going uphill for a while and then you go downhill for a while.
It's more fun.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. What's your favorite trail?
My favorite trails are at Kincaid. They are the Lake and Horseshoe Loops, and at Hillside, they're the Ridge and Richter Loops. And they're my favorites because I like classic skiing more than skating, and because they're narrow trails. When you're on a narrow trail, it feels faster. So mm-hmm. I prefer those trails. And I also like the Leakish because the Leakish has great views, and it's really a fun. The downhills are really a lot of fun.
Fun to terrifying.
That's right. Yeah.
So in terms of, I'm surprised to hear you say you prefer classic. Why?
I think a lot of skiers who are pretty proficient find that classic is a little more dynamic skiing technique. Skating is fairly static. The motions are fairly static, and you're using vectors to push yourself down the trail. Whereas classic, it's a little more relaxing. When you're double poling, you're basically standing there pushing with your arms, mm-hmm. And that's a fairly relaxing motion. And when you're going uphill, you're using your legs a lot and your arms less. And in skating, it's a little more upper body intensive, and again, the motions are a little more static. And I think most really proficient skiers, I think most everybody I know prefers classic if they've been skiing their whole lives.
Yeah. It seems to me that classic is sort of easier to get started with but harder to perfect.
That's right. I would recommend to any beginning skier, somebody who wants to get into skiing and who's never been on skis, the classic, I think, would be the way to go because it's very similar to walking, and you can get down the trail fairly easily by strapping on some skis and skiing classic. Skating takes you have to be able to balance on one ski and glide on one ski in order to skate. It just doesn't work otherwise. But to become very good at classic skiing, there's some very subtle motions that take a long time to get very good at.
Mm-hmm. And turning to you, Diane, I hate to be the have you be the complaint desk today, but one of the things that seems to be happening at Kincaid this year is lack of lights. We have about 16 kilometers that are lighted, but most of them have not been lighted this year because of broken equipment, I guess. And what's the story? What's happening with the lights, and what's the prospect for getting them fixed?
Well, the lighting system at Kincaid is quite old and in desperate need of repair, and there's kind of a overall systematic problem with the light system at Kincaid. And the municipality has been evaluating it and trying to come up with a long-term solution. So they have, before the legislature in their capital budget, a $3 million ask to replace the lighting system at Kincaid and Hillside with the new LED lights that would be cheaper in the long run to operate, but also will fix the sort of endemic problem. It's not a situation of there's a light bulb burned out and you just have to replace it. There's just sort of lots of problems with the lighting system out there, and municipality is very well aware of it, and they've been working on it, and hopefully with some money help from the state of Alaska, there'll be a long-term solution to the problem.
So it's not, I mean, if they call you and complain, they're calling the wrong people because you
correct.
Don't.
Correct. We maintain the trails, but the lighting, the lights and the parking lots are municipality facility and its facility maintenance, I believe.
So the whole system needs to be basically taken out and redone. That could take a while.
Yeah.
That means it's going to be dark?
Well, they did it at Beach Lake. If you've been out to Beach Lake, which is a wonderful place to ski if people haven't been out, out in Chugiak. And last summer, they replaced the whole lighting system out there, and they different kind of lighting, you know, low impact and LED. Mm-hmm. And it's, I haven't been out there during the night, so I haven't actually seen them, but people say it's great. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that that can happen at Kincaid, because, you know, we have our junior Nordic programs out there every night. We got a couple hundred kids out on the trails, and it's good to have lights.
Right. Well, for most of us who work, which I guess is the vast majority of the population, you really can't ski except under the lights, unless you're going to wear a headlamp. And
that's what's happening the last couple of years, that the people in the know always have a headlamp in their pocket. Some of us don't like going down steep hills in the dark.
Right. So, but essentially, until that big project is done, we're not going to see a major improvement in the lights.
I think they're constantly working on it, and and you know, it seems like some areas will come back on, and they'll get a temporary solution. But a lot of the problems just need work. I mean, to discover what the problem is.
Right. I wonder, you know, the other concern I've heard recently is that with all the new sort of cut-throughs and redoing of trails, people get lost at Kincaid a lot. And if there's the signage at the new Girdwood Trail is tremendous. I don't know if you've been out there. Is there any plan to improve the signage at Kincaid or at Hillside?
Well, there's...
I did tell Diana I was going to ask her that, so...
Yeah, we're constantly evaluating, but the signage needs, and especially with the new, there's just, I believe, just one new cutoff at Kincaid that's been put in the last year. Well, there has the rerouting around the soccer fields and things that that we'll be doing. It's again, it's kind of a partnership with the organization and the municipality, and but there was a pretty extensive map sign project done on the hillside not too long ago.
And we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure to ask any future plans or what's coming next for the ski club.
Well, coming up next weekend is the tour of Anchorage,
so everybody
should sign up, because it's going to be great. The last couple weeks or so of snow, so that's going to be good. The online sign up shuts off on Sunday. This Sunday at 10 o'clock.
And the price goes up if you want.
And the price goes up in person. And, you know, you may not get the wave you want if you sign up in person. So do it online.
And that's 25, 40, or 50
or
kilometers.
Or 50 kilometers. And the 25 has a skate or a classic division. So a lot of people actually signing up, moving up. Usually this is time of year people sign up earlier for the 40 and bump down to the 25. And I'm getting a lot of calls for people wanting to move up to the 50. So,
And will you be racing that, Adam?
No, because I'll be at NCAAs in Vermont with the team.
Yeah. Good excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so first place is open now that Adam's not going to be here.
Wouldn't be me.
Well, this has been a fun hour for me. It's Outdoor Explorer. My guests have been former Olympic racer Adam Verrier, Diane Moxness, Executive Director of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. Thanks to both of you. Brian Burnett was on with us earlier from the Girdwood Nordic Ski Club, and Ed Strabel from the Mat-Su Ski Club. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, our topic will be aurora hunting. We'll talk about the research rockets being used to study the aurora borealis, as well as how to find and photograph them. Please post your aurora photos and videos on the Outdoor Explorer Facebook page, and join us next week at 2 p.m. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Kristen Spack is our producer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Charles Wolforth. Happy trails.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect this station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up and to add your voice to the conversation, go to outdoorexplorer.org.